Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. My guest today, Vance Morris. He is an entrepreneur whose career has taken him from working inside Disney to rebuilding his life and business after bankruptcy. Along the way, Vance learned that long-term success is rarely about clever marketing and almost always about the experience people have working with you. Today, he helps business owners design intentional, human-centered client experiences that build trust, loyalty, and referrals. This conversation is especially relevant to our audience of small firm architects who rely on reputation and relationships to stand out in a crowded marketplace. So I'm excited to have this conversation. Vance Morris, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Hopefully I'll drop a few good nuggets for you today.
It sounds good. I'd love to have this conversation with you. Before we jump into building relationships and client experiences, I want to know more about you. I want to understand your origin story. When did you discover your passion for what you do today, and who or what inspired you to get started?
Yeah, fantastic. You know, as I look back on it, it wasn't intentional, but I had a newspaper route growing up. And I think that's where I got my intuition and really how I was going to serve people. Because I realized early on that if I put the newspaper where people wanted me to put the newspaper, like between the door or under the mat,
right,
I got a tip.
Yeah.
So, you know,
crazy how that works, right?
Reinforcement, crazy thing. So really, at 14 years old, I've already been conditioned on how to provide great service just by delivering newspaper. Unfortunately, that job is gone now for youngsters. They have adults doing it, and it's a full-time career for them.
And they whip it out of the car window. They don't even bring
it
to the door.
You know. And then once a year, you get the little flyer and the baggie with it looking for the Christmas tip. So
Right. Anyway,
but looking back on it, you know, I spent a little over a decade with the Disney company after leaving college.
What did you do at Disney?
I was primarily in their resorts division. I was on their opening team of a couple of their resorts back in the 90s.
In Florida?
Yacht and Beach Club was on the opening team of that back in that was in 90. Great year to open a resort, and the first Gulf War was happening. So that was the first thing. Well, I mean, the U.S. hadn't been at war in God knows how long, and
Right. People
didn't know what to expect. And I mean, Disney was almost as empty as it was during COVID. It was tough, but got through it. I was the manager for Pleasure Island. This was Disney's failed attempt at booze, debauchery, and scandally clad women.
I was there. I've been there. It was fun while it lasted.
Oh, yeah. It was great. I mean, I understand why they did it. You know, it was a key demographic that they were missing, 18 to like 30-something, because those people, they're too old to go into the parks and they're too young to have kids of their own to bring in. So what do 18 to 30-somethings like to do? They like to drink. So let's give them a place to do that. And then what I really enjoyed and really kind of, I think my crowning achievement, because it's still there today, 30-some-odd years later, I was on the design team for Chef Mickey's, which is a character dining restaurant. So really working with the entertainment company, the architect, you know, how do we design this restaurant not only for the show, but how do we design it for efficiency that is going to deliver the show? You know, where are the clog points? I mean, our mandate was we had to get the mouse through 400 seats in 43 minutes and make it feel like an experience.
Is that path designed? Does the mouse know where it's going and how quickly it has to move through?
When we designed the dining room and, you know, where the buffet's going and the tables and chairs and everything, was a collaboration with the entertainment department on, okay, you know, here's the best way to get Mickey through. Because if people didn't get a chance to see Mickey, they're going to be cranky.
Right.
And so if they had to wait for Mickey, well, that slowed us down and irritated other people who were waiting for the table. And then obviously Disney is a for-profit company. So
right. We
didn't make as much if we didn't turn the tables.
Yeah. Yeah. Disney is a fascinating company to research and to learn about. All of the backstory, the background of how Disney works is really interesting.
Yeah. You know, and I encourage, even if you're going there, you know, for vacation, if you're, you know, a small business owner, is sit down for 3 or 4 hours, put your business cap on.
Yes.
And just watch what Disney does. I mean, the motions that they go through, the systems that they have in place, you know, for moving people, for getting them through a cash register, getting them onto a ride. It's just beautifully choreographed. I mean, it's just,
right.
You know, I mean, they're moving, you know, every day they're moving 500,000 people around. I mean, no small feat.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. The architects had their national conference in Orlando several years ago, probably about 10 years ago. And I went on the backstage tour of Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
And they took you into the, what do they call the tunnels down
below? The Utilidor.
The Utilidor, right. And took us down there and all the backstage areas. And it was really, especially as an architect, it was super interesting. So if you're listening and you are going to Disney, definitely sign up for that. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. I just want to touch on it quickly.
Yeah.
You know, is that Disney is a storytelling company. And everything at the park, at either Epcot or Magic Kingdom, wherever, every little thing has a story to it. I mean, this is a fanatical attention to detail. So a quick example, if you go to the China Pavilion at Epcot and you're looking into the pavilion and the restaurant is on your left, you'll look up at the restaurant and on the peak of the roof is a little hen with a little guy riding the hen, right? Nobody sees this thing,
yeah.
Right? It just blends in with everything.
Right.
But the story is that is Emperor Min, who was very cruel to his people, so they hung him. And now in Chinese culture, they put this effigy of the emperor out to ward off evil spirits. Now, this thing is,
yeah.
I mean, it's not much more than 14 or 16 inches long.
Right.
And it's got a complete backstory.
Yeah.
So everything is intentional there with the stories. And so,
right.
You know, when you're designing things, you know, what is the story you're trying to tell? And, you know, especially if you can tell a story, it's a hell of a lot easier to sell something as well.
Right. Yeah. It makes it a lot more fun too.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
What did you do after Disney?
Yes, there is life after Disney. I'm living proof of it and curl up into a ball. I had a couple more corporate jobs. I was a director of catering for the Smithsonian Museum System in DC, Kennedy Center, or I think it's still called the Kennedy Center. I think they put somebody else's name up there with it. So some pretty high profile food and beverage jobs. Along the way, I realized I make a lousy employee. I just don't like to be told what to do, which also probably explains my two ex-wives. You know, that just didn't go well. So I got fired. I remember the day. So this was the entrepreneur blood in me. We had Ronald Reagan's funeral procession was going down Constitution Avenue. Mm-hmm. And they had to clear the street of all of the Korean mafia t-shirt sales and hot dog vendors and everything. Because one, it's not dignified. Two, they didn't want bombs or anything. So whole street's cleared. Well, there's no food or beverage service now. So I thought, well, what the heck? Let's, you know, go out there and sell some jelly beans and some water. You know, jelly beans, that's Ron's thing. You know, he's,
right, yeah.
You know,
Jelly bellies.
Yeah, he loved it. So we probably sold, in about an hour, we sold probably close to $5,000 worth of water and jelly beans. I got called into the director's office and said that was probably the most undignified thing you could have possibly done. I mean, just berated me upside down and sideways. And I'm like, are you kidding? Reaganomics, he'd love this stuff if he knew it was happening. So I took my lumps and went on. So I was looking for, they fired me inappropriately. So I got 6 months severance. So I was able to kind of figure out what I was going to do next. And so I was going to design, I put my own business together. That's what every small boy dreams of doing. I started a carpet cleaning business because why not, right? But it was very specifically designed for the affluent market. So, I mean, you can go out on your local telephone pole and see, you know, we'll clean 9 rooms for $47. That was not going to be me. So our marketing was targeted towards the affluent. Our service level was for an affluent market. And that's the direction we went. I mean, we don't even clean rentals. Nothing wrong with them, but I just don't want to clean
them. This wasn't your market.
That's not my market. The same time I was starting that business, my wife had a cerebral aneurysm. She was a regional director for the coffee company that wears the green aprons.
Yep.
Can I say their name? It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Starbucks. So we were going to live off her salary while I was getting the business up and running. She ended up in the neuro ICU for 11 days. And so our income literally overnight went from, you know, nice mid six figures down to goose egg.
Right.
So I had to make a decision. Do I make this thing work or do I go get a job, which I knew I would get fired from anyway. So we made it work. And along the way, yes, we lost the house, did the bankruptcy thing, not proud of it, but you got to do what you got to do to survive.
Yeah, it's there for a reason.
It is, you know, and I mean, you know, you read about all these big corporate ones and, you know, those are all usually a sham. But, you know, for, you know, little guys that really need it, it is. It's great to have it. You know, and same thing with public assistance. You know, I mean, I've paid into the, and my accountant was like, look, you've paid into this system now for well over 25 years. You're allowed to take something out of it, right?
Right.
I mean, was I happy with food stamps? No, but, you know, it's there. Fine. Got it. But it didn't end there. My wife got better. Big scare. She almost died, but got better. We climbed out of the hole, continued to build it. Along the way, added a Oriental rug washing facility to it. We, about 7 years ago, added a mold remediation company to it. And I, along the way, I took all of my Disney knowledge on processes and systems, and I put those into place. So we have marketing systems, operations systems, you know, accounting systems, all that. And I was able to hire a general manager about 7 years ago. And when I hired him and I put him in place, I said, just manage the systems. Don't screw with anything. Right. Just manage the systems and you're going to be fine. You know, and so today I spend 90 minutes a week on those businesses. 1 hour of it is meeting with the general manager every Friday. And I said, look, if you got great ideas, great. We'll discuss them on Friday and then you can go implement them. But we don't change anything unless we talk about it. The other 30 minutes is I don't let go of the checkbook. I keep my finger on all the credit cards, all the bank accounts. Nothing gets by me. So that lets me have time to do what I enjoy doing, which is consulting with small businesses on creating what I call raving fans. If you go to Disney today, right now in the park, 80% of the people that are there now have been there before. It's only 20% new. And to me, if that ratio is good enough for Disney, that's a great ratio for me to go to. So I focus quite a bit on that. You got the customer. It's really expensive to get a customer, but it's relatively inexpensive to keep one. Just quickly, like I got the numbers for last year. It cost me $145 to get a new customer in the front door of my home service businesses. Only cost me $22 a year per customer to keep them. So immediately when we serve an existing customer, we're already $120-some-odd more profitable. So, I mean, in everybody's niche, it's going to be a different number, but those are two numbers that you got to know in your business is what does it cost to get a client? Because that will scare the living crap out of you and really force you to spend more time and effort on retaining customers.
So understanding the cost of obtaining a customer, you're talking about their time involved in doing that, your marketing.
Well, you know, your ad cost, your Google cost, the guy to answer the phone, all that wrapped up, you know, if you divide it by the number of new customers, what is that number? For me, it was $145.
Right. And then you could do the same thing for your current clients that potentially could be repeat clients. What are you investing in that relationship in order for them to come back and do it again?
Yep. Yeah. And that was only $22. So
right.
In my little mind, that makes really good sense.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you teach or consult to keep your clients coming back?
Sure. Well, it does start with the experience. So, because if you don't deliver a great experience, well, you really don't have a prayer of keeping people or keeping customers. So it really does start there. So we look at the entire customer journey, and it's not sexy, it's not exciting, but it's an exercise you have to go through. And it is, you plot out the entire customer journey, each place where your company interacts with the customer, you put it on a spot and make it a box, whatever you want to do. And then you look at it and you prioritize, okay, if we focused on this area, what's going to give us the most bang for our buck? Where are we going to have the most impact? Where will we be able to possibly raise prices? And Disney's got this all figured out. I mean, they are masters at creating experiences out of the mundane. It's all the boring stuff that we got to do day in and day out that Disney's just, I mean, they figured out how to answer the phone and make it feel magical.
Right.
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 So,
or using the restroom.
Or even using the restroom, yes. But that's what people remember, right, is that experience. So I have a insurance broker who's a client, works with Allstate, and he's a big Allstate guy. He's got seven other Allstate insurance guys in his town or city, plus all of the other guys that are out there. So I don't know, this is my 50, 60 insurance agents. He's having a tough time standing out. And I went to visit him in his office, and I'm looking around, and the guy's a rock and roll fanatic. I mean, he's got gold records on the wall, autographed guitars, I mean, everything. And I said, okay, so we need a place for you to stand out immediately when people call your office. So we're brainstorming with his team, and his receptionist said, well, why don't we just start with answering the phone? I said, well, brilliant. That's a great idea. I said, how do you answer the phone now? And it's something along the lines, you know, thank you for calling Dave's Insurance. How can I help you? I mean, we've all heard that from 1,000 companies. She goes, well, why don't we just play into what Dave loves to do, which is rock and roll? I said, okay, great. Well, what are your thoughts? And the receptionist came up with this. I want to point this out. It wasn't the boss or the head guy. This was an employee that came up with the way to answer the phone. And now they answer the phone. Thank you for calling Dave's Insurance, the agency that rocks. Now,
there you go.
You know, first 26 times you say it, yeah, it's a little corny. But now it's part of their shtick.
Yeah.
You know, your marketing is designed to do through two things, you know, attract the people you want to do business with and repel the people you don't. And just by answering the phone that way, they're sifting, sorting, and screening out people that would just not be good clients. Not to mention, they're memorable. He's the rock and roll insurance guy. Nobody can copy him. So, you know, taking your personality, putting it into your business, and then just looking at each of those individual points on the customer journey. Okay, answering the telephone. Great, we got that one checked. Great, what's next? You know, is it in-office experience? Is it, you know, delivery of plans? Is it, what's the next thing that we can improve on, you know, to create the experience that's going to give us the retention?
Yeah, a great way to do that is with post-it notes. I take a blank wall and write each step of your customer experience on a post-it note.
Yep.
And then that way you can write notes on the post-it note. You can rework them and put them in different orders and play with that idea. And obviously there are tools like Miro that you can do that on the computer as well. But the physical post-it note is a great tool.
Yeah, I'm more of a write it down kind of guy. So yeah, whiteboard, post-it notes, that's the perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
And the one thing that you'll find too, though, is that there are going to be gaps in your journey where the customer's not doing anything, because you got to do this from the customer's point of view, not your point of view.
Yeah.
So first the customer does this, then the customer does that. Well, let's say you meet with the customer and it's the initial meeting and you're going to promise you're going to deliver some plans in 2 weeks or whatever your turnaround time is. So then you've got the meeting and then you've got the next meeting. Now you have 2 weeks. The customer is waiting.
Right.
So that's what the customer's doing.
They're experiencing something, right? They're experiencing waiting.
So what are you doing to entertain the customer, to make them not feel like they've got buyer's remorse. Make sure that they don't go find another, you know, get another quote somewhere. What are you doing in that 2-week period? What are you sending them, either through the mail or electronically or carrier pigeon or whatever? What are you doing to remind them that you exist? Because it's not the customer's job to remember us. It's our job to remind customers, yes, we're here. We're here for you. And Disney has a term for this, because if you go to Disney, you wait a lot, right? I mean, you wait for food, you wait for the bus, I mean, everything.
Right, lots of lines.
Well, Disney coined the term linertainment, where they entertain you in line. And so, and actually waiting in line is part of the attraction. You know, if you go to a Haunted Mansion, you know, you're walking through the graveyard and, you know, there's little things to play with and you read the tombstones and all that. You're not actually on the ride yet, but you are being entertained. So we need to bring that into our world of, okay, how do we entertain in between the things that we're delivering? You know, can you send them a FedEx of your book? Now, if they're under construction, I've got one kitchen and bath guy. He's got a step for everything. So, you know, he's got a little, one of those nut grater, nutmeg grater kind of thing. And he'll send that along with, you know, a package of herbs and things like that and say, you know, we're here just to make your kitchen a little bit greater. Ha ha, you know, dad joke kind of stuff. But people talk about it.
Right.
Oh my God, you'll never guess what my kitchen and bath guy gave. My kitchen's a disaster. And he was kind enough to send this while we were, you know, under construction.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by WeCollabify, one of our trusted allied partners. As this community has grown over the years, one thing has become very clear to me. The partners we choose matter. Allied partners are not sponsors. They're not advertisers. They are organizations that we've taken the time to get to know, to work alongside, and to trust. They understand the real pressures of practice and the responsibility that comes with leading a small firm. WeCollabify earned that trust by helping small firm owners address a challenge that sits at the center of long-term firm health, building capacity in a way that supports people, not just projects. Their insourcing model brings skilled design, BIM, and technical professionals directly into your team. They work in your time zone, inside your systems, and part of your day-to-day workflow. That integration allows firms to add capacity when it's needed, scale with intention, and grow without sacrificing culture, leadership focus, or quality of life. If you're thinking beyond short-term fixes and focused on building a firm that lasts, I encourage you, go learn why WeCollabify is one of our trusted allied partners. Visit WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect to learn more. That's WeCollabify.com/EntreeArchitect. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the resources tab, or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Are there any other ideas that architects can do in order to fill in those gaps?
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of it is also in the delivery. You know, I work with a lot of high-end folks. You know, they have large ticket sales, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Or higher. And I would ask them, how do you deliver your proposal or your plans or whatever it is you're delivering? And 9 times out of 10, they say email. And I'm like, okay, they're getting ready to hand you $50,000. and you're doing it by email. Do you think you could spare $9 and send them a FedEx? You know, how do you deliver the plans? Or better yet, do you go to the home or the business and deliver the plans there with, you know, some kind of show? I mean, show is important. I mean, that's where the price elasticity comes in, is, you know, the experience that you're providing. And if you've come in with, you know, projectors and food and things like that, and make a show out of presenting your plans, you've got a much better chance of closing them than, you know, if you just sent them an email, which I just think is good. So always look at, you know, the value of the customer really determines how much you can spend to market to them and attain them. I mean, a couple of my programs, you know, it's a six-figure program. I don't mind spending $5,000 to get a new client because the payoff is going to be six figures. You know, people, oh my God, you spent $5,000 to get a client. I said, yeah, well, you know, the payoff is, or the ROI is good.
Right.
Why wouldn't I do that? You know, some people just get it trapped in their mind that they think like, oh, I can only spend $50. I'm like, well, then you're going to get a $50 kind of client. You're not going to get a $100,000 kind of client.
Yeah. Another point in the architectural project process that architects really need to focus on is construction, because we have a lot of impact and a lot of influence on our clients from that initial contract all the way through construction documents, right? So we finish the construction drawings and we hand them off to the contractor, and the contractor starts building. And the contractor now has the primary experience, right? They're building this thing. And your client is walking through this building that that contractor is building that you designed, right? Everything that's happening is because you designed it. And very often architects will not intentionally be involved in that process. And so that's a really important step to be part of that process, for one. Don't ever not be part of the process and get paid for it. And two, that's an opportunity to do things like what Vance is talking about. Come up with ideas to make sure that the client is having a great experience through that process. Develop some project management tools, some touch points, some opportunities for you to walk them through the framing, right? And then have the drawings next to you so they can see the drawings that you created is becoming this built work, their dream house. And then the other piece is after the project is over, make sure that when the project is complete, you have a final meeting with them and make sure you get credit for this amazing piece of architecture that you designed, and great opportunities to have a final experience when the project is over.
You know, and Disney does this, and I steal a lot of stuff. I mean, it's not stealing, but borrowing the ideas. They have what's called the kiss goodnight, which is like the big final hoo-ha that you're going to remember. So,
right.
For Disney, it's fireworks, right? I mean, if you spend the day at Disney and, you know, you got two screaming kids, you're sunburned, you're malnourished, you're dehydrated, and then 9 o'clock, the fireworks start going off and your little five-year-old hugs you and say, Daddy, this was the best day ever.
Yeah.
That's the big kiss goodnight. Dad just forgot about all of the lines he waited in, all of the money he spent. He's now got his kid saying, this is the greatest thing ever. So we need to be able to do that as well in our business. And I think certainly with, you know, architects and builders, a number of my remodeler clients will do coffee table books of the entire process. They'll come in and they'll, you know,
I've done that.
Pre-construction to planning to construction to final product. They'll put it into a nice hardbound coffee table book.
It's a great idea.
People don't throw books away. And if you just renovated and it's like really, I mean, like all over the top, or it's just amazing. That's what people are going to do. Oh, you know, who did this? Okay, here's the book that he, you know, sent me. And
they show it to every single one of their friends. Yeah.
You know, every single one of them. And then you need to keep in touch with them. You know, when we talked earlier about, you know, it's not the customer's job to remember you. It's your job to remind the customer that you exist. Just because you finished one project doesn't mean you should stop communicating with them. I mean, even if you're not going to get another job from them, you should still be communicating to them because they are now a referral source.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, everybody says they have a referral program and they say, yeah, you know, do you know anybody who needs a new kitchen or needs a new building? And, you know, call me if you do. That's the extent of, you know, the referral program. But referrals have to be engineered. And I strongly recommend newsletters for everybody. Doesn't matter what industry you're in. Strongly recommend a print newsletter. One, not email. I mean, you can send it email as well.
So you're talking about in the mailbox.
The mailbox. I mean, the mailbox is empty these days. I mean, I got a credit card offer and a catalog.
Right.
You know,
when you get something that's not junk or a bill, you value it.
You're like, holy crap, this is great. So you seed your newsletter. It's designed to entertain. It's not a salesy tool, but it is designed to generate referrals. Hey, remember, you know, that new carpet smell feeling that you got if you run into somebody, and you've got to stay top of mind. They're going to forget you after 2-3 months. They're going to be like, who? So you've got to be intentional about staying in touch and communicating so that you can have, whether they come back and buy from you again, but certainly for the referability, you want to continue that communication.
Yeah. Do you find that business owners make mistakes when they're trying to build an experience? Is there anything that we should be aware of that we should not do?
Well, don't be incongruent with who you are and what you deliver. I was at a hotel. I was hosting my mastermind meeting there, and it was a fairly high-end hotel near Annapolis, where I live. And one of the guys came down. I usually have it on my desk. I don't have it here right now, but came down with a cup. Plastic cup from his room. So this is a $500 a night room. They had a plastic cup in there. One, I mean, Holiday Inn gives you real glass, for crying out loud.
Right.
But the plastic cup, on the plastic cup, they had the nerve to say, luxury division. There is nothing luxury about a plastic cup.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the kinds of mistakes you want to avoid. Don't be incongruent with your messaging or your marketing, because people will see through that in a heartbeat. You know, that's really the biggest mistake. You can't really, if you're trying to do things better and you're improving processes, you're improving systems, yeah, you might make a little mistake. As long as you're not incongruent, people will forgive you.
You talked a little bit about that you do consulting and you have a mastermind. You want to talk a little bit about what you do and the services you provide?
Oh, sure. I appreciate that. So I do have a mastermind. It's sold out for 2026, but a group of 15 entrepreneurs that get together 4 times a year solely for the purpose of growing their businesses, bringing problems and stuff to the table. If you're not in a mastermind, I highly recommend one. Find one, because they exponentially will move your business.
That's a big part of what Entree Architect does. We have 30 masterminds at Entree Architect.
Perfect. Yep. Yeah. So yes, do that, please. I'm just like having your own board of advisors, and you know, it's just
the best thing we do.
The one of the fun things I get to do is take business groups to Disney.
Oh, cool.
I do three or four day boot camps down there. And we'll spend half the time in the classroom, half the time in the theme park, learning all things Disney. We do build your customer journey while we're there. And at the end of the 3 days, you have a blueprint on how you're going to Disney-fify your business going forward. And then it's got some follow-up coaching just to make sure you stay on track. And then I have one-on-one clients where I'll go in and work with the business, build the systems with them, you know, really look at the customer journey, look at who they are serving, who should they be serving, who should they not be serving. You remember at the beginning, I knew I was going to be for, you know, affluent homeowners. You know, so do you know who you are for? I love the one-on-one stuff because, you know, I can really roll up my sleeves, get dirty, get into the business and just have some fun. It's the creativity part that I really like. But I'll tell you, going to Disney for 3 days ain't a bad way to make a buck either.
And that's applying the ideas that we talked about in the beginning and how exciting it is to go to Disney as a business owner and look at what they're doing from a process and systems point of view. It's fascinating. Vance's website is deliverservicenow.com. If you want to go learn more about what he does and inquire in some of these things that he does, you can go there, deliverservicenow.com. Final question for you, Vance. You're a business owner. You work with lots of business owners. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
It is my standard answer, and this is what I deliver to all of my clients and my coaching members. Implement. You won't profit unless you implement. You're not going to move the needle. I hopefully heard a few good ideas today. Maybe you heard it on another podcast or you read something. You say, oh, that's a good idea.
Right.
Well, until you implement it, it's just an idea. It's just a wish. So take something you learned today, one thing, implement it, and move the needle. That's the only way it's going to happen. And it's the only way you're going to, you know, be able to expand the business is consistent implementation of ideas.
His name is Vance Morris. DeliverServiceNow.com is the website. Before we hit the big red button and started recording, you talked about a free download that you have. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that. So for those of you that, I mean, I know you're architects, so you are creative. But if you're kind of figuring out, how do I wow people? I've got a real quick document for you. It's called 52 Ways to Wow Your Client Without Breaking the Bank. So it's 52 low or no cost ways, one wow a week for you that will really kind of get your juices flowing. And plenty of ideas in there that you can start implementing. I mean, most of them are, they don't cost you a thing to do. Some of them might just be go buy a box of thank you cards and start doing handwritten thank you notes. But you can find that at wow52ways.com.
All right. So wow52ways.com, wow52ways.com. Vance, this is a very interesting conversation. I really enjoyed having the time with you. I appreciate you for coming by and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
If you enjoyed this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend, because that's how we've continued to grow and serve thousands more small firm architects just like you. Thank you to our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources we discussed today, they are all available in the show notes for this episode at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a proud member of the Gable Media Network. It's the multimedia network moving the architecture, engineering, and construction industries forward through the power of storytelling. You can earn AIA continuing education credits by listening to select episodes of this podcast and many others at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up. Join us today at Entree Architect Network. It's the worldwide community for entrepreneur architects. We've been around since 2012, and our basic level is now free to join. Yes, you can join Entree Architect Network for free. And that gives you access to valuable business resources and our global community of architects. And you can upgrade anytime for live coaching, AIA-approved training, and mastermind support. So visit entrearchitect.com to learn more and to get started. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to the Entree Architect Podcast. Love, learn, share. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.